So when we think of atmosphere, we also think of the auditory atmosphere. What are the sounds in the air? Is there laughter? Is there a place for tears? When there's tears, is it safe and comforted? When there's laughter, is it genuine and authentic based on the real incongruencies of life that are frankly funny at times? Or is it at the expense of someone else? When there's correction, is it peaceful in tone? Or is it out of control in anxiety and anger? All of these things have a profound effect upon the atmosphere. What's listened to when children are reading quietly? Is Handel's Water Music being played in the background, ever so gently, ever so beautifully? Or is it Alvin and the Chipmunks? And there might be a place for the entertaining sounds of Alvin and the Chipmunks, but is that really what's highest and most noble and most beautiful? And what am I saying to children when that's what we put on at any given moment? I'm saying you're not capable of appreciating the truly beautiful. Your aesthetic sensitivities are base and not to be cultivated. And the children say, okay, I believe you. Yeah, children here actually love classical music. Let me give you an example. A seventh grader gets in the car and there happens to be playing on the radio a song, a regular top 40 song. This seventh grader turns to her mother and says, you know, Mom, not only are the lyrics of that song really rather banal, there's not much to them. They're kind of absurd. But the music itself, it's so weak. I mean, it's maybe 3-4 chords. You know, a squirrel could have been walking on a piano and composed that. Well, what had happened? She had been introduced to beautiful music. Her natural appreciation for beautiful music had been cultivated, and such that when she heard something that was not beautiful, she was quick to recognize it. So often, it's what I call the gourmet cat food syndrome. You've seen the commercials, they've got cat food, gourmet cat. What? No cat knows what gourmet mean. No cat's interested in gourmet. Adults are buying it because they've been sold the idea that this is what the cat would want. I think that happens a lot with children. We have these ideas of what the child's room should be like, of what she would like, of the kind of children's stories that they would like, and that they're often absurd. They will like them. They will want them if the adults tell them, oh, this is what 5-year-olds want. This is what 7-year-olds want. Ah, didn't know that. Didn't know I wanted a wall with saying, won't you be my friend? Didn't know I wanted that, but okay, that's what I want because the adults have told me that. The adults say, no, what you want is beautiful art, beautiful music. Okay, great. Now, in fact, this is really satisfying, good stuff. Noble characters. There was no such thing as children's literature until a couple hundred years ago. There would have been 150 years ago, there was no such thing as children's literature. There would have only been good literature and bad literature, and children would have partaken in some of the great stories that adults would have read. Same thing, there would have been no such thing as the children's room with all the little cutouts and the little animals or whatever on the wall. That wouldn't exist. No. While it is true, a little mobile or something for a young child, multicolored, that it can follow with its eyes as they're developing. But what goes on the walls, that's a lot of that we've just been marketed to. So if you go to our classrooms, and that leads me to the last thing about atmosphere, physical space has a lot to do with atmosphere. If you go to our classrooms, you'll see beautiful wooden table, wooden desks, and it's going to have the feel of a nice, well-lived-in, comfortable living room. Beautiful artwork, an inspirational quote. Oh, and yes, you'll see a history timeline. You'll see bulletin boards. You might see a periodic table in the older classes where they study science. So you'll see some of these things, but you'll get a sense of, gee, this is really beautiful. This feels like a nice place to spend a day. You won't see a lot of kiddie art that's sold at the local educational store. You won't see flying pigs hanging from the ceilings.
When you think about the atmosphere of environment, and that's one of our tools in relating to children as persons, as a classroom teacher, often the focus on the atmosphere of environment is actually just something imitated from what we can buy at a teacher's store. I remember in my early years of teaching, I was actually teaching at a school where They had asked us that everything on our bulletin boards had to be something that we personally cut out, and that we had to limit the use of the teacher's store. So that got me on a track of thinking about beauty in the classroom, and that sometimes we define beauty as something that's personal. It's our expression of what we like and what we desire. And yet beauty has an objective stance. It has an objective aspect to it. And so when I think about the beauty of a classroom, not everything is beauty. Untidiness is not beautiful. And so when we ask teachers to teach in our schools or do the work of creating their classroom to be beautiful or to be something that's neatly organized, we give them expectation and standards, and we tell them what it is and what it isn't. And yes, there's a little bit of choice and maybe where they put things, but it's not, everything is not open to them. And I think that's important, because as we're in classrooms, we don't want to be distracted. I know myself, I'm easily distracted by things, and I think that sometimes too many things is a distraction. And so as I do the work of teaching in a classroom, I like to limit the amount of choice. And so we don't have many shelves with many books. We have a few shelves, and we put our books on our shelf, and we have neatly ways of organizing them and putting things here and there, and that they're always in the same place, and that people know where to get their books and get their things. And we don't have desks that open in such a way in which they can just put things in. And I remember teaching in schools where we'd have a little smell here and there, and we'd think, oh no, there's an orange. Someone's left an orange in their desk. And sure enough, we'd get an old moldy orange out and throw it in the trash, and those kinds of things, because, you know, we had so much stuff in the classrooms. And so when we think about the atmosphere of environment, it's simple. It's beautiful in its form, the kind of furniture we choose, the kinds of things that are put on the walls. It's not changed in and out each month or even for several months. There are things put up for our view and for our enjoyment.
You'll see a space that takes the mind of a child seriously and cultivates that mind. And that matters, because when a child walks into a classroom, that classroom space will tell the child exactly what we think of him and her and his or her capacities. Create a juvenile space. The child walks in and says, okay, you think of me as juvenile, somehow of different mental capacities than you, that I couldn't possibly like truly beautiful art, truly beautiful music, truly great literature. Have the child walk into a classroom in which those things are lifted up and there's nothing childish in it. And the child says to himself, okay, you have high expectations of me. You think I can know and understand and appreciate what's good and true and beautiful.